Southern jukebox. Sister, why? Mother, freedom. Father, time. Since she left me by myself, you're the only family I've got left.
Today on the show, we're going to talk about the year 1991. And not only, you know, what was going on in the world, but also going to dive into a little bit of what was going on in my world. You know, I finally made it into the 90s, if you will, as far as episodes go. This is episode 91 of the podcast. I figured, hell, what better subject to cover than the year 1991? I was 9 years old in 1991, and it was kind of a big year for me, I guess you would say. My parents got divorced in 1990, so this was the first full year of me basically learning to live that way. I'd been living with my mom and just really trying to figure out how to be a kid without, you know, both of my parents being in the same household. So this is what we're going to be covering this year. And I made a lot of memories in 1991 that still, you know, stick out in my head. And, of course, for my music channel, Josh Porter 08 on YouTube or joshporter08.com, I decided to record, you know, a cover song like I love to do a lot of times. And a lot of times I do record old country songs. And Mark Chestnut actually had a number one hit with Brother Jukebox back in 1991, actually a couple of weeks in February. I think it was actually the 16th and then last weekend, whatever date that was, the 23rd. So that's why I decided to record that song and post it up. After doing a little research, it was very, very cool to know now that that's still one of my favorite songs. It's definitely in my top 100 of all time. Mark Chestnut had such a good run back then, man. In 1991, he was really firing on all cylinders. And that's a song that was recorded back in the 80s by a young artist, Keith Whitley, and never released as a single. So, and also Don Everly, back in the day of the Everly Brothers, recorded the song before it finally came to Mark Chestnut's door. And he got the label to put it out there as a single.
Introducing the champion, fighting out of the red corner. This man is a wrestler. He stands 6 feet 1 inch tall, weighing in at 203 pounds. Fighting out of Moody, Alabama, USA, presenting the Guitar Slinging Podcast Champion of the World, Josh, the Hillbilly Luchador
So I'd ended up in Vestavia Hills by this time, you know, third grade, going from a small town, Jemison, Alabama, to it's a suburb of Birmingham that has kind of always been known for the upper class, if you will, kind of people around here, and I didn't really fit in, you know. I was raised pretty much by my grandparents for the most part, and with two working parents. I had a grandma that she stayed home, my granny, and she took care of me and my cousins. And the just ability of living in that small town for those first, you know, 3 or 4 years that I was in school, it was a great experience. I didn't have any enemies, really. Had a ton of friends. Had the same girlfriend for first through third grade. Of course, we didn't do much talking or nothing. It was just understood that she was my girlfriend. Just a smile and holding hands every now and then was pretty much the extent of our relationship. But, you know, to have one of my best friends, he lived across the road. Or he didn't live there, but he stayed with his aunt a lot, his aunt and his uncle, Tony. To have him right across the road, and we'd shoot basketball or whatever, and just be kids, and ride the bus with those guys, and all that stuff that was just day-to-day, you know, that was my world. And to see my grandparents on a daily basis was just great, too, because we lived right down the road from them until right before my parents got divorced. They decided to build a new house, and as you see all the time, that's a very, very stressful situation, trying to build a new house and stuff, and for whatever reason, their marriage didn't work out, and like I said, I was living with my mom at this point in 1991, and up in Vestavia Hills, man, there was just, I went there for just a couple years, and I think I was gone by fifth grade, and I think I might have had three friends in those 2 years that I was up there. It was just a very, very unstable time, I guess you would say. We were living in an apartment. I didn't have a yard like I'd had when I was younger and stuff, and that's hard on a kid. And this is all, you know, looking back now, I didn't really understand much of what was going on. I was just kind of there, you know, just trying to make the best out of it, which is what we do as humans. Even little kids have to make the best out of it. It was a little overwhelming, but that's exactly what I had going on in 1991. But when the summer rolled around, everything got a lot better, because that would be the time that I would stay with my dad for those, you know, summer break months. And I say I would stay with my dad. I would probably 80% of the time be at my grandparents' house, because my dad worked a lot. And that was where I wanted to be anyway. I always loved being with my granny and doing, you know, whatever she was doing. She always found a way to entertain kids. And a lot of times it would be just me and her. You know, my other cousins would be there quite a bit later on, but back in 91, it was mainly just me over there. And I can remember a lot of trips that we would take down to Clanton, Alabama from Jemison, and going to Walmart shopping with her. First thing we would do, we'd go by the First Alabama Bank and get how much she needed to get out, cash a check or whatever, and get some spending money, if you will, and head on down the road. I remember we was riding in at that time she had I believe it was a 78 or 79 Mercury Cougar that my mom had actually sold her. My mom's infamous for trading cars and stuff, and she didn't like that one, and my granny would keep a car forever. So she still had that old Cougar back in 91. We'd get in that thing and head on down the road. After we left the bank, we'd drive down to Walmart, and this was back before there were super centers or anything like that. There wasn't no groceries sold or nothing like that at Walmart back then. And it was just a different experience. And anytime you went somewhere with Granny, she had to look at everything. And I guess that's why, hell, I still like to shop now. I go out. My wife is kind of astonished sometimes that I don't get impatient or anything. Hell, I like to look around myself, even if I'm not buying anything. But we'd leave Walmart, and then we'd head on over to Pizza Hut, where they'd be having that lunch buffet. And this was at the old school, you know, Pizza Huts. I don't know how many of y'all. There's still a lot of brick-and-mortar Pizza Huts that are kind of remnants from the 80s that are out there, but I don't think they're run quite like they used to be. A lot of the dough is frozen, and the ingredients is just, you know, mass ship stuff. But I felt like Pizza Hut was some good stuff back then, man. But some good, good memories. I would eat, hell, I'd eat 4 or 5 slices of pizza, eat some of them cinnamon sticks, cheese sticks, have some, just 2 or 3 glasses of Mountain Dew. I didn't care. Didn't know no better. Was just eating like a savage. Good memories, man. I can't eat like that no more. I'll blow up like a bullfrog. It's amazing the stuff that you can eat whenever you're a kid. And my granny now, she was infamous for just giving me whatever I wanted, you know. And I wasn't mad at that. If we didn't go to Pizza Hut, though, we'd also go to the Dairy Queen sometimes down in Clanton. And it was one of them old-school Dairy Queens. I don't know if y'all have ever been to one. But, man, Dairy Queen back in the 80s and the early 90s, whew, boy, they was on time. They're chicken fingers. I think that's probably where I fell in love with the chicken finger, man. They had an old dude, he was the manager there. It was very, very nice. He looked exactly like old Napoleon Dynamite's Uncle Rico on that movie. He had the old porn stash and that bowl cut haircut. He thought he was something else, but he was a nice guy, and I always remember him really hooking up them chicken fingers, man, getting the best cook back there to drop them down in that fry oil, and we really would have a good lunch there. And, you know, we'd head on over to the Bargain Town a lot of times after we'd leave there. Now, if you don't know what Bargain Town is, Bargain Town was like a, I guess, there wasn't so many Dollar Generals back then. You know, only a Bucks or Dollar Trees or any of that. They had this store called Bargain Town. And what I loved about Bargain Town was they would have the old Hasbro WWF figures, you know, the little small guys that I've still got some of them today on my shelf over here. A lot of the ones that I would go through that old store just tickled to death to find. I think they were probably back at that time maybe $4.99 or $5.99, and I always had enough. I remember I would have about, if I can remember right, I think I got about $5 a week allowance. So I would always spend it on, you know, a wrestler. Either a wrestler or a cassette tape that was in the discount box, some old country music or something. But if I could get to the Bargain Town with Granny, a lot of times if I only had that $5, you know, it might go over just a little bit with the tax. She'd always cover me on that tax. But we also went to a store, and I can remember being in here a lot because Granny, whenever she would be shopping for clothes especially, it would really be an all-day affair. And we went to Bennett's department store down in Clanton, and Bennett's is no longer there anymore, but it was on Main Street. I remember parking the old car and getting out and going in there, and they had this weird kind of unlevel floor. Like you would have to go up a few steps to get to where the adults' clothes were. And then, like I said, you go down them steps. And this is inside the store. And the floor was unlevel and wooden in spots. It was a strange, I guess what had happened was that they had bought maybe a couple of stores and maybe combined them to make this one big store, you know, knocked out some walls or whatever. So maybe that was why it was unlevel. I don't really know. But I remember there were some creepy old salesmen that worked in there. And I just remember all the time I would be looking at shoes or whatnot. And they didn't act like they wanted me, you know, handling the shoes. I'd always put them back like I was supposed to, like a good boy ought to. But I do remember going in old Bennett's down there in Clanton, Alabama. But that would be pretty much our day every Friday during the summertime especially. And then, you know, the rest of the year I would when I would be over there on a Saturday a lot, we would go to Piggly Wiggly and buy groceries. I can remember we'd go to Piggly Wiggly out in Jimson, buy groceries, and then go back home. And I'd help my granny unload all the groceries and everything. And I would be tickled because at 12 o'clock, I don't know what, and at this time, there was only like three or four stations they had. They didn't have cable television, so they had the old antenna. And like I said, the main networks was, it was ABC, CBS, Fox, what was that other one? NBC, yeah, that was it. And I think around this time, public television was around too, so maybe there were five networks. Fox was out by 91, I'm pretty sure. I think it came out in the late 80s. But, yeah, there would be, I don't remember what station it was on, but this was the time that MTV had been out for quite a while, and there was one of those local stations that would be playing music videos. And that was my first real exposure to anything other than country music, because I just always watched and listened to country music because that's what my family always liked. They didn't really listen to anything else other than gospel music, and I had no interest in that. I was always just, you know, even when I didn't understand what country music was about as a kid, I just loved the storytelling in it and the melodies and all that stuff, man. I was hooked. I was hooked from an early, early age. Hank Williams Jr. and George Strait really were the top two guys for me. Probably, shit, till early 90s, maybe even 91. I was still hooked on those guys pretty well. But I remember I'd get out and have those groceries unloaded and everything, and Bon Jovi was on there. Now, not the band Bon Jovi, just John Bon Jovi. He had done that soundtrack to the Young Guns 2, and he had that song Blaze of Glory. And I remember seeing the video for that. And it was, you know, it had country elements in it, outlaw type. And, of course, I love those old movies. Those were great movies, those Young Guns movies. And I remember just being blown away seeing John Bon Jovi do that. So that was kind of where I started to say, oh, man, there's other music out there that's pretty badass as well. So it's pretty cool that old John Bon Jovi brought me in to other types of music, rock, blues, and stuff like that, because I started watching that video show and there was all kind of stuff on there. Just gonna go over a few little interesting facts from back in 1991. You know, the average monthly rent for Americans was $495, and the average income was $29,430. The cost of a gallon of gasoline was $1.12. Boy, I miss that. That must have been pretty damn sweet. Pound of bacon would cost you $1.95 a pound. Can't beat that. Dozen eggs was 85 cents. You know, also at this time, I can vividly remember the U.S. being at war with Iraq, and I think it was Christmas time, whenever we bombed Kuwait, I believe it was, that I remember sitting in the back room, and I would always get to the Christmas parties a little bit early. And, you know, Granny and them just had a little small TV back there. But I can remember that footage of our soldiers bombing Iraq and just being scared and not really understanding what all of that was about. But, yeah, we were at war then, and some other things that were going on. Mike Tyson, still probably my favorite boxer of all time, was arrested and charged with rape and ended up later going to prison on account of that. That sucks, man. Who knows what he would have done if he hadn't have got in trouble like that, if he had been able to keep his head on straight and not get into anything. Because once he got out, he never was the same fighter, but he was still one hell of a fighter. Let's see what else we got here. I'm just kind of scrolling through this site here. Freddie Mercury announced that he had AIDS. That's a sad day, man. Freddie Mercury is one of the greatest singers of all time. Back in 91, he released that. It's terrible. Let's see what else. Oh, the internet. It was made available back then. And it got up to 1 million people using the internet in 1991. Who the hell was using the internet? I guess that must have been for businesses and stuff, because I don't remember anybody using the internet back then. I mean, we had those old Apple computers and stuff in schools, but I don't remember anybody being on the internet back in 91. I think the thing that I missed at the time in 1991 that was absolutely huge as far as other music, and I would later get into and become a huge fan, was the release of Nevermind, Nirvana's first album. Hell, it was probably, it had to be the late 90s before I really, really, really got into Nirvana. My best friend and bandmate back then in our little garage band was a big Nirvana fan, and he got me into them. And man, I remember listening to Nevermind all the freaking time driving these old back roads down here. Country folks like Nirvana too, trust me, I was one of them. So that was released back in 91, and that completely changed, you know, rock music, you know, until Kurt Cobain died in 94. Popular films. Ooh, Terminator 2, Judgment Day. Boy, did I watch that. God dang, I watched that a bunch. And that's still a good movie now, and it's kind of crazy. The effects really aren't all that bad, even now. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. That's the one with old Kevin Costner. I've seen that one 1,000 times, too. That was a VHS favorite. The Silence of the Lambs. Seen that one several times, too. You can't beat old Hannibal Lecter. The Addams Family, I remember watching that one a bunch of times. The Naked Gun 2.5. I remember seeing the original Naked Gun. I don't really remember that. Backdraft, that was a huge hit. Thelma and Louise came out that year. Listen to some of the popular musicians, though, man. And this is just, you know, popular musicians as far as, you know, rock and pop go. We had Pearl Jam, we had Whitney Houston, Michael Jackson, Queen, Bryan Adams, Guns N' Roses, Mariah Carey, Metallica, R.E.M., Janet Jackson, freaking Van Halen was still hanging in there. Garth Brooks, of course, had, you know, really was just flying high in 1991, winning all the awards and all that stuff. So, man, Boys to Men was everywhere, too. What a popular group Boys to Men was. I remember hearing their music everywhere back then. We had a lot of good stuff going on back in 1991, man. I got nothing but fond memories of it. It was, like I said, a turbulent time for me as a kid trying to get adjusted to having divorced parents. But it was a good time, man. I really, really can't even express to y'all how fond those memories are of me going to Walmart once a week with my granny. That was the highlight of that year for sure, and several years there to come, I'm sure. But next week, hell, or whenever I release the next podcast, probably just going to go on and talk a little bit about 1992. This was a strange year. I can't end on this without touching on the fact that WrestleMania 7, as far as pro wrestling, was in 91. And I've been watching it, trying to, you know, trying to get caught up on it because I got to be honest with y'all. Even though I was a huge WWF fan, for whatever reason, they kind of lost me around this time. And maybe it was because I was moving around and whatnot. But WrestleMania 7 has got to be one of my least favorite WrestleManias of all time. And we had Sergeant Slaughter as the WWF champion going into this thing because the Ultimate Warrior had not worked out as being the guy. At WrestleMania 6, the Ultimate Challenge, Hulk Hogan had, quote-unquote, passed the torch, if you will, to the Ultimate Warrior. And for whatever reason, it just wasn't the right move for the company. So we had Hulk Hogan and Sergeant Slaughter going at it at WrestleMania 7. And this is a Sergeant Slaughter that was past his prime, let's be honest. He had aligned himself with the Iron Sheik and General Agnon, I believe was his name. And he had defected against America, so Hulk Hogan had to set him straight. You know, that was the storyline or whatever. And I've watched this match before, but I hadn't ever watched the whole show that I can remember. Just a couple of highlights from the show, man. The Hart Foundation and the Nasty Boys put on one hell of a damn wrestling match. This will remind you how good the Hart Foundation was if you get a chance to watch that match. I watched Rick Martel and Jake the Snake Roberts have one of the it was terrible, but it wasn't really their fault. They were wrestling blindfolded or under a hood. Basically, they had knapsacks on their head. And this match went on for, it felt like forever. I think it was about 10 minutes long. And it was very, very hard to watch. And that's crazy because those are two of the greatest wrestlers of all time as far as work rate goes. You can't beat Jake the Snake Roberts. But those two matches and then the main event, you got to give it up. Now, Ultimate Warrior and Macho Man fought at this, and I haven't watched it yet. I've heard it was great. I heard it was one of the best matches, but I am going to watch it. I'm just kind of taking my time watching this, you know, three or four matches at a time rather than trying to watch the whole show. But like I said, I had watched the main event with Hulk Hogan and Sergeant Slaughter several months ago, and this was actually the first hardcore match that I can recall in WWF history. It's not labeled that way, but there's lots of blood and brutality in this match. It's actually a dang good match. And, you know, it was time to get the Hulkster back in the driver's seat again in 1991. So he went back to the top of the mountain. And that was what was going on in pro wrestling. I don't know much about what was going on in WCW then, because other than collecting their Galoob action figures, which I know I had Sting, Lex Luger, Sid Vicious, who else did I have? Oh, yeah, I had the Steiner Brothers. Had to have the Steiner Brothers. They were so popular back then. This was before, I believe, they went to the WWF. And, yeah, that was pretty much what was going on in WCW. I really didn't watch it that much back then, but I was aware that it was a thing. Didn't get into WCW until a couple of years later. But, yeah, 1991 was a great year. And that's about all I got on it. Anyway, y'all feel free to Google 91 and check out some of the stuff that I probably left off. And hell, leave it in the comments or something. If you had something that affected you, I'd love to hear from you. You can also check out my website, joshporter08.com, or hit up the Hillbilly Luchador podcast on iTunes. Most of the episodes are up there from this, hell, almost three-year run now. It's been a hell of a good time. Y'all take care. We'll catch you next time right here.